Welcome everyone to the part two of our two-part season preview episode. Today we will be discussing all of the awards races for the 2017-18 season. I'm Brian Toporek. Joining us today are Sarah Chalea, Morten Jensen, and Matt Moore of CBS Sports. Without further ado, here is part two. All right, let's move into the award debate. Let's start with MVP, since once again, unlike 2 years ago where Steph Curry just kind of annihilated everyone, I feel like heading into the year at least, pretty much all of the top MVP finishers from last year, save for Kawhi, got a lot of reinforcements this summer. You got James Harden has Chris Paul now. Russell Westbrook has Paul George and Carmelo Anthony. You have LeBron James, got Isaiah, lost Kyrie, but got Isaiah Thomas, got his buddy Dwayne Wade back, got the shell that is Derrick Rose. So once again, wide open race. Matt, last year, toward the end of last year, I feel like the MVP race drove you to the brink of insanity because you were writing you must have written 10,000 words about the race ultimately. Have you spent that much time so far thinking about this one? And who do you think, do you have a preseason favorite yet?
I have not started thinking about it yet, thankfully. I think, not deep diving, I've thought about it, but I haven't started doing research on it because you just have to see how it goes. There's too many variables. My pick right now is Kawhi Leonard. And the injury is an interesting question mark because on the one hand, look, it's Popovich, and it could be just totally fine, and they just know that there's no reason for him to be playing. My concern is when Popovich said, no, it's what he suffered last year. He's just still trying to get over it. That was red alarms went off all over the place for me. I'm like, wait, what? This is a 4 months ago injury that he's trying to get past, and he's not playing in preseason? And the thing is, even if it bothers him a little bit, his whole thing is efficiency, right? He's efficient. Mm-hmm. He is, to me, the most versatile player in the NBA right now, including LeBron James, mostly because of choice. Kawhi chooses to do more things than LeBron does because LeBron has the luxury of not. Kawhi can guard almost anywhere. He can't guard as many of the big positions as LeBron can. He's secretly under the radar. You can actually bully Kawhi in the post, and nobody's really dug into that because nobody does it. But offensively, Kawhi's efficiency across the board is stunning. The fact that he's so good as a ball handler in ISO, in pick and roll, off screens, spot up, everywhere across the board, he's so efficient. And if the Spurs, like I was talking about earlier, are still in that top tier, there were so many smart voters that voted for him last year. Guys like Zach Lowe, guys like Tom Haberstroh that know this game really well and have really smart takes. Those smart takes go viral and they kind of emanate throughout the league, and then they get filtered back to the reporters who then vote on stuff. And Russ was an easy choice, I think, for a lot of the voters last year. I went with Harden for a number of reasons I cannot get into for fear of having trauma, but I do think that this year Kawhi's a guy that could have that kind of effect where people just look at it and go, he's so impactful in so many ways. All of these other guys have help. The stats aren't jumping off the page for Westbrook's not averaging a triple-double. Harden's not leading NBA history in points produced. LeBron's coasting. The Bucks are middle of the pack. All of these things. That, to me, all suggests that Kawhi's got an excellent chance at MVP. I think Giannis is going to be a guy that's going to make an interesting case. I think Kevin Durant's going to probably get a lot more conversation than people are going to expect because of it's been a year, and typically what happens is not just the media, the public. The public, we punish these guys for decisions like KD made for about a year, and then we get over it. And I have a lot of thoughts on KD's decision that I've written about in the past, but from an objective standpoint, there's a likelihood that the perception about KD shifts, and that's what really matters when we talk about MVP is what's the perception of him and where his game is at and how impactful he is, which is funny because he could wind up being MVP this year, despite the fact that Curry is still probably the most important player for what Golden State does.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happened with LeBron in Miami, right? He went to Miami. Everyone hated him for a year, made it to the finals, didn't win, but then came back the next year, won two straight MVPs. So I think KD is a really, it's a not sexy pick, but had he not gotten hurt last year, I think he would have been, he probably would have been top four at least. He probably would have bumped LeBron out down to number five. So I think that's a totally reasonable call there. Sarah, how happy are you that he's got Kawhi number one?
I feel like that's, you know, that's the common sense pick to me. I'm not understanding. I've seen some people who don't even have him top three, and I'm trying to figure that out. But, yeah, he's got to be the favorite right now, I think, for all the reasons that Matt just said. You know, everybody else is not going to have the same type of year they had, the two main competitors last year. Kawhi had such a great case last year, even so. You know, hopefully, like I said, we don't know what the deal is with the injury. I had not heard that it was something from last year. I wish I could go back and unhear that. But, yeah, but if he's able to start the year relatively soon and he's feeling good, you know, with Tony still being out, there's the potential for him to run even more pick and roll. That was really one of the main knocks that people had last year, was he didn't create enough for others. So I think he's shown aptitude for that, so he could do that even more. I also had Giannis as a contender, and I also had Kevin Durant. You guys know my feelings on that, but I do think, like Matt said, people are going to be more comfortable with the decision that he made this year, and that is a big factor. And he was getting some buzz last year before he got hurt, so I definitely expect him to be in the running.
If it makes you feel better, I can comfort you through knowing how to deal with injuries to all your favorite players. I've got some pro tips for you for the last 5 years. Mort, are you also on the, you were on the Kawhi trade last year, so I assume you were back on this year?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he has to be the clear-cut favorite going in. Durant as well, I had him as number two going in. And then John Wall is my number three guy. Ooh, but I'm kind of nice. Going, yeah. Yeah, but I'm kind of thinking Giannis could overtake that one. But I just love what Wall did last year, and I think he's building on something. I think this was year one of his prime, like his absolute fine prime, and it's going to continue on this season. And now we have Otto Porter, who's developing a lot to be that third star for him. So I think he has a lot of options now. He's going to have a sick line.
I had Wall fifth last year on my official vote. I was very adamant that he was the fifth best player in the NBA in terms of impact. I think that this year, especially if he gets back to being the kind of player he's capable of being on the defensive end, he needs one of those years where his shot just falls a little bit better. Like, he just gets a few more rolls on shots for his field goal percentage to tick up just a little bit, to bump his points up just a little bit, and those numbers are going to look absolutely insane. His impact is so much greater than even his stat line. His stat line's always incredible. I think Wall's a really great pick, but the problem you have to think about is, like, Washington would realistically have to win, you know, 53 games in order for him to be in that conversation. That's what's tough. And that's, I think, the same problem that Giannis is facing as well is – you know, you're going to have to get to 53 if you're going to want to be in that conversation. Like, that's just the reality of it, is if you're going to beat out Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard and even guys like Paul George and Russell Westbrook and LeBron James, you're going to have to be in the 53-plus category, and that's a tall order for teams that haven't been there yet.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Markieff Morris injury, you know, he should be back relatively soon, but that's going to hurt Washington's chances of getting that high, you would think. Although, who knows, they've been talking about plugging Otto Porter in at the four a little bit, which could be interesting. Like you guys, I have Kawhi, KD, Giannis all up in there. I have Kyrie number five right now, because I think, you know, I think he is going to be very intent on proving that his trade request was, you know, that he really is able to carry a team like he thinks he can.
My only thing there is, you got to keep in mind who the voters are. Okay, so what you have is basically how they have reformatted the voting block to, by some weird, terrible mistake, have included me. You have traditionalists and a huge swath of traditionalists. There's a middle block of international, and then you have kind of the more hyper-analytical guys that I fall into, Zach Lowe, Tom Haverstroh, Ben Golliver, those kind of guys. And so what's going to happen a lot is, you know, Harden and Westbrook produced at such an insane level that it was able to overcome what their defense was. And their defense, honestly, last year was fine. Like, it wasn't good, but it was fine. Kyrie's has been bad, has been consistently shitty. And so, like, he's going to have to go from shitty to not bad. In order for him to even be in the conversation for a lot of these votes, mm-hmm. he's going to have to adapt to a brand new system. And as much as he's talking about, oh, no, I want to be a point guard. It was just Cleveland that made me into an ISO scorer, which I was since I came into the league. He's going to have to do more than score. He can lead the league in scoring. That will not get it done. He's going to have, even if he's super efficient and Boston wins a ton of games, if we're able to look at the Celtics and go, look, Kyrie's an incredible scorer, but the reason that team wins games is because of X, Y, and Z, it's not going to be enough for him. He's going to have to make such a jump. And the other thing is, I'll tell you this, if Kyrie starts to make a serious run at MVP, LeBron James all of a sudden is going to start giving a lot more effort in a regular season context. Mm-hmm. And that's going to and that could get very interesting. If Kyrie jumps out ahead of the MVP pack, do not be shocked if all of a sudden it's like, yeah, LeBron's coming back from injury a few games early. And oh, LeBron has to come back in this meaningless game against the Nets in February. Like, don't be surprised if that happens. So there's a lot of kind of context to Kyrie and his pursuit of MVP. It's not to say it can't happen.
Oh, God, I want that.
Like, I could see it if like Kyrie is just like, yeah, he averaged 33 a game and the Celtics won a surprising, like the Celtics won 62. I could see that happening. It's just not something I feel comfortable putting a lot of faith in at this point.
Yeah, that's you actually gave the reason why LeBron right now is number one on my board. You know, I understand the argument for Kawhi, and I feel like he is, you know, probably the consensus pick, but because of I just expect LeBron to go so team petty and just like, you know, he's saying all the right things about the trade. He like posts on social media and isn't like throwing that much shade. But I just imagine behind the scenes, that guy must be so pissed off. And I'm sure he wants to just annihilate Kyrie in every sense of the word. Like, he wants the Cavs to be better than the Celtics. He wants to beat Kyrie in the MVP race. He wants to just, like, put Kyrie in his place and be like, yo, why did you leave me? Like, I'm still the king. I'm still the best player on this earth. I know I'm probably going to leave next year, but... you know, like, this, we had a good thing going, and now you piss me off. So I'm expecting, especially because I do believe this is LeBron's last season in Cleveland. I've said this before. I just think he's going to give one more, like, just go all out, you know, his, like, love letter to the Cleveland community, basically. With Isaiah out early in the year, he has a lot of new pieces. I think, you know, this Dwayne Wade thing, like, we make fun of Wade and say he's not that impactful, but, like, clearly LeBron loves playing with Dwayne Wade, just loves Dwayne Wade as like one of his best friends. I think he's going to be like a little bit happier now with Dwayne in the lineup and like playing alongside one of his best friends every night. I was not as high on the Cavs until I heard the stuff about, you know, now they're maybe going to start Kevin Love and put Jay Crowder at the four and put Tristan off the bench. Like, that's only going to A, preserve LeBron's energy on defense a little bit, B, give him more shooters in the starting lineup. Like, it wouldn't totally shock me if he puts up, you know, he had career high numbers in rebounds and assists last year, and it just flew under the radar because of what Russ and Harden did. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if LeBron has another season where he averages like 27, 9, and 8, which is close to what he did last year. But now, because the Cavs are going to be more under the spotlight and more scrutinized given all their offseason changes, you know, this could be his last hurrah, where he's like, after this, I'm probably going to the Lakers. Lonzo's going to get all the attention, so let me get one more MVP under my belt before I do.
Well, you said that he was going to the Lakers, and he said Lonzo's going to get all the attention. Is he going to the Lakers or China?
Interesting.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. I think the one thing with LeBron, though, is very quietly, his defense has slipped. I say that as somebody that has long appreciated what that guy does in all passes of the game. Like, I'm pretty close to being a LeBron like stan, just in terms of how I have so much appreciation for what he's done in the league, on, off the court, like the way he shaped his game, big moments, everything. Like, that guy's incredible. He is the most amazing player that I've ever covered. Obviously, generational talent. Mm-hmm. But last year, like, he took a lot of plays off. I mean, he just took a lot of plays off defensively, and he wasn't nearly the stopper. And there was a lot of times where he wasn't taking the assignment. Like, he was telling other guys, like, hey, go up and take this. I'm going to go chill out and handle Jay Crowder over here, and just like, and then give up an open three-pointer to Jay Crowder because I'm off ball. The metrics hit a lot of it, but when you go back and you watch really up close on the Cavs, especially, it was actually shocking in the finals, like, Kevin Durant torched him for the first two games of the series. Like, Kevin Durant straight up torched LeBron James. And that's hard to do, and Kevin Durant's one of the only people that can do it, but it happened. And so, if LeBron's going to make that run in MVP, you know, he's got to get the points along with those rebounds and assists. He's got to have that kind of season. The Cavs are going to have to far out exceed expectations, and you're still talking at that point. You're talking about 57-plus wins, closer to 60. They're going to have to be, like, a top-three team in the league, not just a top-three team in the East, for him to get there, and his defense is going to have to be better. It's a high bar that he's going to set. He also has his previous seasons working against him, but on the other hand of it, there's going to be a push from voters that realize, like, the meaning of what it would be for him to win five MVPs and what that would mean for him. The kind of guys that he winds up being in line with if he wins his fifth is going to be a topper on his career that people are going to feel like he needs.
Yeah, I'm optimistic that Jay will help. You know, having Jay in the starting lineup will at least help with some of those defensive concerns. So now he doesn't have to guard the opposing, you know, the best opposing wing every night and put up again 25-9-9. Like, he can focus more of his energy on offense and, you know, preserve himself a little more on defense. So even if he's not as defensively impactful as he was earlier in his career, at least, like, the metrics will not say he is, you know, below average now. Like, he might just grade out as average or above average. The thing that I think is going to hurt him the most is just the talent drought in the East. Like, now if the Cavs could basically turn into, like, last year or the Warriors from 2 years ago, where, like, all of their starters sit out the fourth quarter for half their games because they're playing the Orlando Magic and they're up 50 points on them by the third quarter. Like, they're playing the Bulls and, you know, they're resting after halftime. So whereas the West now, like, all of those teams got so much better that I actually think the Warriors are going to have to play their guys a little bit more than they would like to. The East, it's the opposite concern. Like, the only reason you're going to have to play the guys, you know, 35-plus minutes is because you want them to develop chemistry heading into the playoffs. Like, you're going to blow out the, you know, the Pacers and the Magic and the Knicks and the Nets. Like, those teams aren't going to put up much of a fight most nights against these top four seeds. So, yeah, this all goes to say, MVP, again, wide open this year. You can make a case for, realistically, like, 8 or 9 guys heading into the year. That's probably selling it short. You know, we didn't even talk about Harden, Russ, Chris Paul, you could say. Paul George is maybe going to get in there. Anthony Davis, Jimmy Butler, Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, all of these guys could be in the mix feasibly. So it should be a fun one to monitor this year. Defensive Player of the Year, I feel like it's kind of just turned into a three-man race between Rudy Gobert, Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green. Kawhi and Draymond have split it the last 3 years. So, Matt, who would you peg as the early favorite this year?
It's Rudy. Rudy's going to be the guy because we're usually a year late on rewarding guys, and that's not to say that Rudy deserved it last year because I voted very comfortably and confidently for Draymond Green. Please don't hurt me for that. But, like, I just think that Gobert is very likely to get it this year. Utah is going to have to double down on defense in order for them to win games because their offense is going to slide a lot. And so I think Rudy's got a very good chance of taking it. I just think that his impact and where he's at and the conversation around him, I think somebody will probably crash the party. Probably a wing defender will probably get in on the action and start picking up some of those votes. But if they do, they're going to take votes away from the other perimeter defenders, which are primarily Draymond and Kawhi. Even though you think of Draymond as like an interior guy, his holding is versatility. And so those wing defenders are going to wind up splitting votes, and Gobert will take it from traditionalists that view the impact of the shot-blocking, rim-protecting big man. So I think I feel pretty confident that Rudy Gobert, if healthy, is going to take it.
Yeah, he's my pick as well. And worth noting, Robert Covington was fourth in the voting last year, so maybe he'll slide in. Still some votes from Kawhi. Sarah, are you gonna go for the twofer with Kawhi, or are you gonna also give it to Gobert?
No. By the way, has anybody ever won MVP and Defensive Player of the Year at the same year? That seems impossible.
Question. I'm not.
I sure. Well, did Mike win the MVP when he won Defensive Player of the Year? I'm not sure.
No.
Well, yeah, I don't think that had happened, but. Yeah, No, I tried really hard, Brian, to come up with somebody outside of those three. And, I mean, maybe Jay Crowder if he just really focuses on just that for that team. But I don't really see it happening. Oh. I'd like to see Andre Roberson get a little bit more love. He's if he keeps up the way he has. What's up, Mort? Did you find it?
Yeah, three, four nope. players have done it.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's oh, Hakeem.
Yeah, Hakeem won it. David Robinson, KG, and Jordan.
Wow. The same year?
Yeah. Wow. Wait, no. Maybe that's independently. That's going to be independent.
Okay. Yeah, I knew that there were players.
Jordan and Elijah. Jordan and Elijah won both awards in the same season. So those two.
Wow. That's incredible. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, well, maybe.
There you go.
No, I actually had both Gobert and Draymond above him this year. I don't think that he's going to finish that high again this year. But, hey, you never know. But, yeah, I actually kind of felt like it was Gobert's year as well. We'll see how the voters go. But like I said, well, I'd love to see Roberson get a little more love if he continues to defend at the same level and maybe even gets a little better. I think sometimes maybe, possibly, he gets docked just because he's not good offensively, but that mm-hmm. shouldn't hurt how good he is defensively.
Right.
You know, it could help Kawhi, actually, is because a lot of their really great defenders are gone, and it's going to help his MVP case as well. If the Spurs win all these games, the voters are going to feel like, look, Kawhi is this team. He's the only reason they're this good. And they really like that argument. I'm not keen on it because I look at things a little bit more of a complex fluidity standpoint, but I could definitely see a scenario where defensively, especially, if they're number one defensively and you're just looking up and down this roster and you're like, they have no good defenders, and they are the best defense in the league. Like, this is clearly Kawhi. If the on-off numbers even out the way everyone kind of expects them to, like, I could definitely see that being the case.
Yeah, as long as a certain CBS Sports reporter doesn't write a long article about his on-off numbers being
I was so grateful no one asked Popovich about that. Like, I was because I kept waiting for someone to ask it. Like, I literally was like running to the computer every day when I knew that there was pregame availability going on, being like, please don't ask, please don't ask, please don't ask, please don't ask.
Oh, yeah, that would have been the only time he actually spoke to the media, and he would have just gone off for like 15 minutes, I bet. That would have been, that could have been good. All right, Mort, do you also agree, Gobert, preseason favorite?
Yeah, I actually had Draymond first, though I preferred to be Rudy, and it's because I think with Gordon Hayward leaving Utah, you know, Gobert is going to have a bigger offensive role, and I think a lot of voters are going to look at that and say, oh, then he's not going to have like the same level of intensity available defensively, so let's go with Draymond because he doesn't even need to take a shot during a game. He's all in on defense. But my personal preference, obviously Gobert. I think he's the best defender in the league at this point.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to sixth man of the year. Another really wide open one, especially because part of it we just don't know who's starting with a lot of these teams. So, Matt, who do you have as your early favorite, if you have one?
For which award? Which one are we talking about?
Sixth man of the year.
Oh. Man. I gotta wait and see. The other thing is, like, I'm always off on these. And the reason is, it's just an award about scoring. And I'm not great at evaluating the game that way. Like, I'm always about, like, who's giving the most on both ends of the floor and, like, who's really providing, like, who's actually coming in and leading these units? Who's actually coming in and providing the baseline? I think Greg Monroe had a really excellent case last year. I think he was excellent. I gave it to Andre Iguodala just because I had never said Iguodala was it in previous years because Iguodala said he didn't want it, and I was like, I respect his decision to not be treated as such. Like, he's starter caliber. He just happens to play for the Warriors. But as soon as he was like, no, I want it, I was like, all right, done. You get it. If you want it, you get it. I don't think it's likely that he repeats because there was some slippage last year. Mm-hmm. So I think I got to be honest with you. I don't have a name. I'm going to have to wait and see kind of who comes out and who develops it. I'll give you this one. Patrick Patterson is one is a name that I'll put on the list.
Wow.
I think Patterson's one that could wind up because he's going to have so many open looks and he's going to have such a high-powered offense. If he knocks down shots and plays defense and rebounds, I think there's a good chance that Patterson gets a solid chance at that.
I like that pick. Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, I can't believe he came up with that one, because that was one that I had too.
Nice.
That's awesome, though. Yeah, Patrick Patterson. I actually had Norman Powell number one.
Ooh.
But that was really more of like a feel thing. Sometimes I just get a good feeling.
That's a great pick. That's a great pick.
Yeah, and so it may not happen, but Eric Gordon, I think, has a good chance to be up there again. Mm-hmm. Actually, like, I was looking, you know, intentionally trying to look at teams that I think will be pretty good. Like, who can be the guy coming off the bench? And I was thinking about Mbah Amute for a minute. He actually shot 39% from three last year.
Yeah.
But I just feel like he won't get as many shots in all likelihood as Eric Gordon. And as Matt said, they usually give it to the guy who scores more points. So, and then I was looking at the Warriors as well, and I thought, you know, Caspi is an interesting guy. Mm. Obviously, Nick Young. But, yeah, then you look at the fact that they have, like, four guys who could win it. You know, Iggy, Livingston's always phenomenal for them. So it's hard to pick one guy off that team.
Yeah. Oh my God, I am so here for Nick Young winning sixth man of the year. Let's start that campaign right now. Mort, any names that they haven't mentioned yet?
Well, Sarah mentioned a current Raptor. I'm going to go with a former Raptor in Corey Joseph.
Ooh.
And yeah, but again, this was like the toughest one as well, because it's something that develops over the course of a year when someone's role is defined and they kind of get into it and they accept it and embrace that, you know, I am the sixth man. And also, I agree with Matt, it's always like a high scoring popularity contest in that sense. So I'm kind of hoping that breaks with Corey Joseph, simply because he's not going to be a guy who's going to come out and average 17. He's probably going to be a guy who's come out and plays steady defense and scores like 12 points a game. I also hope his move to Indiana frees him up a little bit, because he came into a Raptors team where he was forced to shoot a lot more than drive. Like, his three-point rate went up and his free throw rate went down, and that's not his game. And I'm kind of hoping that Indiana has looked at that and not forces him, but opens him up to become that player he used to be in San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Corey Joseph is a really good pick. And that Indiana team, going back to the talk about, you know, a team that could, like, sneak into the playoffs, like, I've talked about how much I hated what they did this summer because they just refused to embrace a rebuild, but, like, they have the talent. Like, their top six are all NBA players, which you can't really say about many teams in that range of the East. So, Corey Joseph could be a really interesting guy. I mean, if the Cavaliers actually have the gumption to put Dwayne Wade on the bench and keep J.R. Smith in the starting lineup, which I think they should do, you know, if we're, you know, we're saying six man often goes to a high scoring guy, I could just see D. Wade sneaking in there. Will Barton's a guy that I just have always loved, and I feel like with Gallinari gone, the Nuggets are gonna need that scorer off the bench. I think, you know, he's filled that role very well the last couple years, so it wouldn't surprise me if he's in there. Sarah, as you mentioned, Eric Gordon, you know, before Lou Williams came to town, he was, I thought, far and away the front runner. Lou Williams as well could be right in the mix. And I'm also giving a shout out to homie Dario. I don't think he's going to put up huge numbers, but I just love him and I want him to get an award after he was wrongfully robbed last year. All right, speaking of being wrongfully robbed of MVP, or Rookie of the Year, I should say, let's move to Rookie of the Year. Matt, are we all just going to give it to Lonzo Ball and move on?
Not at all. Not in any capacity. Here's one. He's bad. He's bad.
Uh-oh.
Like, it's cute. I like that everyone likes the energy around him and thinks his dad's entertaining for some dumbass reason, but, like, that guy's shot is a corkscrew. Yeah. And it's low, and defenders are going to block the hell out of it. His release point on his layup is low. Like, he's shooting from his hip on layups. Do you know what's going to happen when Rudy Gobert sees that? He's going to block that thing into the moon. That team is garbage. They're surrounded by bad players all over the place. Julius Randle's their best player. He can't. Not only can that kid not play defense, but he's going to get targeted
very specifically over and over and over again. So, no, it's not going to be Lonzo Ball. Dennis Smith Jr. is a really good pick. I think that Ben Simmons, based off of a single preseason game, sure, is a really good pick. I think that you can even get some of the deeper cut guys on the list, and then they could make a run at it. I think that it's not insane to me to envision a scenario where Jason Tatum is just getting raining buckets constantly for a playoff team, and that winds up mattering. There's all of these guys I can go up and down the list and think that they're going to be it. If Lonzo Ball gets it, I am pretty confident it's going to be because he plays for the Lakers and there's hype about him. Because one of the things that's going to be a missed is, like, does he make good passes? Yes, but so many of the assists that he's racked up are just basically, like, very essential, symbol. Like, he's passing to a guy on the wing, he's taking two dribbles and taking a jumper, and he's getting the assist credit for it. I have yet to see a pass from Lonzo in preseason basketball, not even full-speed NBA, that's really been like, oh, wow, he really found a way to exploit the offense. And he's going to have guys around him to do that. I just have a lot of skepticism about Lonzo. I think there's a lot of guys. I think Darren Fox is going to be on that list. I think that there's all these guys that are going to have a really strong potential to take that award. I think it's going to be wide open. But I think, you know, if I'm going with anybody, I'm going with Ben Simmons, just based off of he has another year. Like, he's had a year in NBA strength and conditioning programs, and that helps you. But yeah, I would not put Lonzo Ball in my top seven for Rookie of the Year.
Oh my God, I am so excited for your mentions when you really start going to war on Lonzo Ball this year. It's gonna be it's gonna be a fun day on Twitter. Sarah, where do you see the Rookie of the Year race shaking out?
I actually had Ben Simmons number one as well. I think it's gonna be tough because I do think, let's face it, Lonzo is going to be on ESPN every single day, good, bad, or ugly. His dad has pretty much made sure of that, and ESPN being ESPN has made sure of that. He's going to be in the news all the time, so it might be hard for someone else to overcome that, but we do have, you know, knowledgeable voters out there who don't just pay attention to that, so that's the good news.
That's how Brogdon won.
I just like what Ben does. I think he has the potential to really be impactful. I like Dennis Smith Jr. too. I think, you know, Malik Monk is probably going to get more opportunity now with what's happened to Nick. So there's a lot of rookies that I like, though. I don't, you know, like Donovan Mitchell's probably not going to get that much time, but I like him. Just, of course, we know Mort likes him as well. Is that who you got, Mort?
Hell yes, it is. I'm all in for Donovan Mitchell. I don't care. With no Gordon Hayward there, he's going to get a lot of shots. Everyone is like touting Rodney Hood as the go-to scorer, which I agree with. But there's still a lot of shots left on the table for Donovan. He's very close to being an NBA defender already. He's going to have to adjust just a little bit, but his body is, it seems to be NBA ready. He's great defensively. His athleticism is off the charts. The jumper has been improving. I am really digging Donovan Mitchell, and I think he's going to take it.
So I got to ask you a question. How many young dudes have gotten significant playing time under Quinn Snyder?
That's true. That's the thing. That is like the biggest obstacle for him. But given how they're constructed currently, I think he doesn't really have a choice. When he push comes to shove, he's going to look at that team. He's going to play the best players. And I... Oh, you're not... Yeah, hopefully. Okay.
Well, think of it this way. When Hayward and Gobert were hurt the last couple of seasons, did he turn to young guys to try and provide a boost, or did he double down on, we're going to have to grind out games?
He did. That's true.
And, bear in mind that a lot of these rotations and the kind of lineups that Mitchell would be playing in, even though he's more of a four at this point, Joe Johnson's going to be getting a lot of those minutes as well and operating in that kind of a capacity. And if you're a team that's trying to win games this season and – you know, Ricky Rubio will find him because Ricky Rubio loves everyone. But, like, if you're on a lineup and you got a bunch of guys that are trying to win games and you're like, because this happened with Jamal Murray last year, where Jamal Murray was a really talented scorer and sometimes the best natural scorer on the team. He was not given the ball by the veterans because the veterans were like, we can't trust you yet. Like, you're just too young and you don't know what you're doing and we're trying to win this game right now. So, like, all of those factors, like, Donovan's position is really ill-suited for him to be able to put up big numbers. I think he can look good, but I'm skeptical that he's going to be able to produce at the level he's going to need to.
Yeah.
Other than that, it was a really good idea, though, and like I like Donovan Mitchell a lot. Like, other than that, it's like a really interesting idea. I think I'll tell you this. Like, I think there's a good chance that he wins Sixth Man of the Year in a couple of years, and he winds up being a real star. Because you made a really good point about how he's NBA ready to defend right now. That's going to help him a lot, just in terms of his body being able to and the mindset that he takes. That's a really good point, and that could help him with getting minutes if he shows that he's ahead of the curve like that. Because Hood's gotten minutes and opportunities, and like Snyder wasn't afraid to basically give the reins to Hood over Burks when that didn't work out. So, but that position is really log jammed for them as well.
Well, that's the thing. I'm kind of not counting on. I hope I'm wrong, but Alec Burks is playing like 20 games a year. Sometimes he goes down a lot. So the fragility of him is something that I'm banking on for Donovan to get a chance. If Alec is healthy, then absolutely that goes out the window. But I'm just looking at the roster, and exactly with your Joe Johnson point is well noted, because I had him going in like as a 3 and a small ball 4, which kind of in my mind said, you know what, that's going to open up minutes. For my mind, it was more because Donovan is potentially NBA ready defensively. Quinn Snyder loves good defense. He understands good defense. And that's kind of what I'm betting all my chips on here, is he's going to look at Donovan and he's going to go, you know what, we need some very disruptive D at the 2 slot. Then he's going to get minutes, and that's when he's going to break out, because of his offense is a lot better than people give him credit for. That one, his first season, his freshman season in Louisville, it was god awful, and I don't think people have really caught on to the fact just how much he improved from year 1 to year 2. So, but I mean, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a real chance he ends up being one of the 5 or 6 best players from his class, but it is going to be tough for him to get the minutes required for Rookie of the Year. Mort, I'm sad you didn't pick Lauri Markkanen. I really wanted you to go all in on him.
Well, I mean, look, he was great at EuroBasket. He really was. But I really can't trust Fred Hoiberg to develop anyone.
Yeah.
So.
The finisher.
Yeah, I've heard.
That's a good nickname.
Oh, God. Yeah, it is.
I think
could have had Dennis Smith Jr. though.
You could have, but you already have 6 point guards of the future. Why do you need a 7?
Oh, I'm gonna. Hey, you know what? I have something to say about that when we reach most improved player.
I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, I think Rookie of the Year, it's gonna come down to Ball, Simmons, or Smith. I have Ball number 1, even though he's not. I think Simmons is gonna be the best player this year, but I think because Ball is on the Lakers, is gonna be on ESPN every night. You know, they have made no bones about turning the team over to him. He has less talent around him than Ben Simmons does. I think, you know, it all comes down to Embiid, I guess, and how Fultz does. But I just think it's going to be easier for Lonzo to put up big box score numbers. It's basically going to be like the Michael Carter Williams phenomenon for a couple years ago.
How?
He's like.
How is he going to get assists on a team that can't score? And how is he going to score with that broken-ass jump shot?
He's got Brooke Lopez. He has KCP. I have faith in Brandon Ingram still. If, you know, Randall, they're like telling Randall not to handle the ball in transition and give it to
Lonzo. Such a bad move.
Yeah, right.
They're
getting rid of one of Julius Randall's biggest strengths so Lonzo can handle the ball more. It just seems like they want him to be one of the highest usage point guards in the league, which
he may not play to their strength. Yeah, he may be too big to fail. Like that's a reasonable point that like he may just be like we're gonna make this happen no matter what, and then the rest of us are gonna be like he shot 37% from the field, and his turnover ratio was like 1.2, and like they were 17 points worse with him on the courts, and they're like, nope, he averaged 9 assists. That's all it took.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
if it's gonna be a Laker, it should clearly be Kuzma, right?
Oh yeah,
people are 100% serious about that in my mentions. Like, they're like, you put him on that list. And I'm like, okay, it's been 6 good games in Summer League and preseason, but sure.
God bless Lakers fans. They can just be optimistic about anything. Okay, let's go into most improved player. Mort, hit us with your hot take right away.
Well, let me just say first, right off the bat, the number one guy I have there is Gary Harris, because Gary Harris is awesome. Willie Hernan Gomez is my second guy. I know that position is just loaded in New York at this point, but that's partly why I think he's going to outplay everyone there at the center spot and just make that position his own, and he's going to prove just how brilliant he is.
Sure.
Then here's the thing, and this is not a vote of confidence, by the way. This is not like a compliment to Jerian Grant, who is the best point guard on the Bulls of all their point guards of the future. I just think they have no one else to really take a lot of shots. They have Zach LaVine and, to some extent, you know, Nikola Mirotic, but that's not enough. You still need someone else to step up and shoot the damn ball, and you can't really trust Chris Dunn to do it. He's going to go 1-for-9 anyway, so Jerian Grant, why not? That's where I'm at. And he's actively lobbying for it as well. He's been all out. You know, he's going to get the MIP and whatnot, and he's going to have, like, a season where his raw stats are going to look, like, semi-decent, and the rest, when you dig into it, is going to look horrid, and I'm going to love it because it's going to be so bad.
He plays for the Bulls, so he's automatically out of any award race in my books.
I love the fact that you just have to clarify for the listeners. He plays for the Bulls.
Right,
yeah.
Right. In case you didn't know, because he went to basketball purgatory, he does play on the Chicago Bulls. The Chicago Bulls are objectively the worst team in basketball. Therefore, it doesn't matter how much he improves, he's still going to be playing next to complete garbage.
Oh, yeah. So it's not really him improving, it's his stat line.
Right, yeah.
Probably,
like next,
slightly
right.
improving.
Yeah. Next to his D-League teammates, maybe he'll put up good numbers. But
oh, God.
Yeah. Sarah, how about you? Who do you have the most improved race?
I also had Gary Harris number one.
Yes.
I had Taurean Prince on my list.
Oh, yes. Yep.
I think, you know, he's going to get a lot more playing time. He's not necessarily going to be that much better, but I think he was solid last year, and he's just going to have that much more opportunity to show it. It's interesting at this point in the year because, you know, it's such a crapshoot. We don't really know what kind of work guys put in, especially us who haven't been in the gyms at all. So, yeah, I would love to give it to a guy like Justice Winslow or Brandon Ingram, but I don't really see that happening for either of them this year. I'm still in on those guys, still hopeful, but I can't go with that yet this year.
Yeah, I don't have him on my list, but Stanley Johnson is another one who I could actually see sneaking in there. Matt, how about you? Do you have a most improved favorite so far?
Gary Harris is a really smart one.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be better defensively this year. He's going to continue to put up really great numbers. There's sometimes a similar effect with DPOY where there's a lag effect where a guy improves the previous year and it takes a year to catch up. Harris was phenomenal last year. His on-off stats were incredible. He makes everybody better. He's the best cutter with Jokic. He's a great shooter. He's going to be much better defensively this year with the scheme the Nuggets are implementing. Your pick of Miles Turner that you put on the list is really good just because he's going to have a lot of opportunities, and that's going to give him a lot of nights where he's the best player on the floor. Rodney Hood's another good pick. If Hood's able to get healthy and put it together, he's gonna really show out, and that's gonna help them. If Utah's in that conversation, then he's gonna get a lot of pull for that. I think a lot of it comes down to there's only two ways this goes. There's CJ McCollum years where we all see it coming, and Gary Harris would be kind of the candidate there. And then there's years where it's just like, wow, like nobody expected him to kind of make that leap. One thing I will say is stay away from second-year guys because the voters, we've kind of wisened up to that, and we don't do that because it's like you're supposed to improve between your first and second year in the league. Like, it's hard not to improve between your first and second year because your first year is really rough. And so these third- and fourth-year guys are oftentimes kind of a better opportunity. I'll throw out one more name for you. Victor Oladipo, I think, is a really sneaky candidate for that. Depot had some good moments last year, and it was a rough situation with how much Russ was dominating the ball and being in a new environment. If he's able to kind of get his feet under him, and if he just makes a leap in any significant area, his versatility is going to help them a lot. If Indiana is better than expected, and it's not because of Turner, then Oladipo's got a really good chance at being able to come in and take that award. Oh, and one more guy, Yusuf Nurkic. Which is kind of a crap out in terms of like the real story on that, having covered him in Denver, would be like player who's most improved in giving a goddamn about any particular play or practice or his conditioning or playing through injury or passing or his teammates, because he really was a complete garbage fire in Denver, but he's really turned the corner and bought into what Terry Stotts has sold him. And if he comes out as just a monster and plays at an all-star level, there's a great chance that he's going to wind up in that spot as well.
Yeah, the Nurkic pick is good. I didn't give him consideration. Depot would be fourth on my list right now, because a lot of the times it's not even like which players have actually improved the most. It's like who has more opportunity because of off-season turnover. And that's, you know, you mentioned, Matt, the guys on my list, Miles Turner, Rodney Hood, Gary Harris, all three of those guys. Turner's going to be, in theory, the number one option in Indiana now. Rodney Hood, with Gordon Hayward gone, he's going to take over that wing scoring mantle, and they've said, you know, we expect him to average 18 points a game. You guys all talked about Gary Harris. I'm in on him too. I think he's going to have a monster year. So, you know, it's hard, Sarah, as you said, it's hard to like project who added the most to their games. I'm basically just picking good guys who are going to have increased opportunities, and I think Turner, Hood, Harris all stand out in that category. So let's wrap up with Coach of the Year now, which is also a crapshoot, especially this early in the year. Mort, you have established you just think Greg Popovich should win every year until the end of time. So are you sticking with Pop this year?
Always. Always. Look, here's the thing. When I think, like Matt has said several times, in that, you know, voters are a year late to the game, or fans are late to the game, whatever. Like, I'm still waiting for someone to give Tim Duncan his first Defensive Player of the Year award. I don't want to see when Pop, you know, retires, we look back and he has, like, just too few Coach of the Year awards. He deserves as many as he can possibly carry. So, yeah, I'm on Pop until he retires. I don't care.
Yeah, he's number one on my list, too. I just think if the Spurs are going to be as good as we expect them to be, given what happened everywhere else in the West, then voters are just going to have to recognize, like, look, it's Kawhi and friends instead of, like, Kawhi and two other superstars. So if the Spurs still win 55 games, that is a testament to Pop and Kawhi more than, you know, they didn't need to build a super team of big threes to stay relevant in a super-powered West. Sarah, are you also on the Pop train?
Well, I'm always on the Pop train, but I had Brad Stevens number one, actually. Mm. That's, you know, it's quite the chemistry experiment they've got going there, and a lot of new pieces, but he's always been so good at drawing things up, and he's got all these new pieces to play with, so I think that could be interesting. I also had Pop and Spoelstra in my list. I had a hard time, though, coming up with names, which is not usually the case. I think it'll be a lot easier once we're a couple months into the season. But yeah, it's just like picking good coaches at the moment.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Matt, who's atop your Coach of the Year board?
Popovich is good. Guys, I've actually got something going on upstairs. Can I depart for a second?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, sure thing.
Sorry about that. 1 second.
No problem.
Hey, really sorry about that. Something like came to my door, my kids home upstairs just stopped, like, hanging out, and like the dog has a tendency to run out, and I was afraid it was like a maintenance guy, and so I was like,
gotcha.
Disaster could strike, so yeah, that sorry totally about valid. That
all good,
my bad.
Do you want me to just feed you that question again, and then we can, I'll just
kind of ask
in a couple minutes? Okay, cool. Matt, who is the top of your Coach of the Year board?
I mean, Pop's easy. Pop's just like, it's an easy choice. He's always going to get votes from smart people that know that he's the best coach in the game. You know, if they win as many games as we think, the risk is if they do slip, right? If they have one of those years like 2015 where they are a little bit under, like he has to beat that standard
consistently, and that's going to be a problem, I think. I have a lot more names on the list, right? So I think, of it this way. That pack of West teams we talked about, where any like all those teams are so close, whoever comes out of that is going to have a really good shot. Because if you wind up with the fifth or sixth seed, if Portland winds up fifth, Terry Stotts is going to have a really great claim to that. If the Wolves are even better than we expected, and they're like competing with the other three teams behind Golden State, Tibbs is going to get a lot of votes because he's very popular with the media for the perception of what he is. A team like Denver, if they wind up winning 47 to 50 games, they're going to be in that, like Michael Malone's going to be in that conversation. All the way up and down, you're going to have these guys that, if you're not expected to be as good, because they did last year, like Miami, it was basically Spoelstra wound up taking Coach of the Year votes because his team sucked hard right. for a month and a half and then got so much better. And that kind of stuff impacts, like those narratives impact the voters a lot. And that's something that you have to kind of keep in mind is the path that somebody takes. So if a team like Brooklyn, Philadelphia, or Indiana, if one of those three teams is actually above 500, they're going to get a lot of votes because the expectation and the thought process is that that team does not have the talent to finish with that kind of a record. Popovich is the easy default answer, and that's where you need to stick to. D'Antoni is a guy I would not go for. Billy Donovan is a guy I would not go for because he's got too many new things going on. I am not willing to put stock in Brad Stevens because I've never seen him with actual star talent before. I don't know how he's going to do in that situation, especially, like, is he going to get through to Kyrie? If he does, I wouldn't be shocked at it. I'd be like, oh, all right, that makes sense. And he's a great coach, but... And the big thing with Stevens, although I will say, I'm like talking myself into it as I talk, the voters want to give Brad Stevens an award. Like,
yeah.
Everyone loves him. The media loves him. The fans love him. The players love it. Like, it's very easy to give Brad Stevens Coach of the Year if the Celtics are a top, you know, three team in the league. So. That's actually a pretty good choice. I'm just so skeptical of like new teams coming together with that kind of talent built around Kyrie freaking Irving. but it's a pretty reasonable option. I think there's a lot of guys that could wind up taking it, even if Pop is by the runaway kind of default choice.
Yeah. I Stevens is number two on my list. Cause I think I'm probably a little more optimistic. I just think, you know, him being reunited with Gordon Hayward, I think that will help ease the acclimation period a little bit, since he's at least, you know, it's been what, 7-8 years since they've been together, so, but at least, you know, they are familiar with one another. It won't be like a completely fresh start like it is with Kyrie, but as you know, as we talked about earlier, like what they brought back four players from last year, like it is going to be really hard for them to hit the ground running. So if they do, by some miracle of God, you know, and if Kyrie ends up having an MVP caliber season, it wouldn't be hard to see Stevens getting it. But Matt, as you said, like any of those teams in that 5 through 10 range, like if they really surge up, it'd be very easy to see any of them. And none of us mentioned Steve Kerr, who, like, you know, he can basically fall asleep and the Warriors are going to win 70 games. So just by default, like if they again threaten to crack 70, or God forbid, if they try to get for 74, like he's going to pick up votes as well. So this whole exercise is basically to show that really outside of Defensive Player of the Year, where there seem to be a few clear front runners, like all of these award races, there are a bunch of good choices heading into the year. So I think it's, you know, I want to combat this whole season. I feel like there's going to be Warriors fatigue and Warriors Cavs fatigue, where it's like, oh god, the Warriors are just going to win the title again, or oh god, we're going to have round four of the finals of Warriors Cavs. And like, there's so much other stuff to watch, which we're going to devote our episode to next week. There's so much fun stuff to watch this season. Like, I don't want the likely occurrence in June to ruin our next 9 months of having basketball back. So these award races should at least add a little bit of intrigue as you otherwise wait for the inevitable doom that is the Golden State Warriors in the 2018 NBA Finals.
There is one thing we do know in regards to awards, though. That is, Gar Forman is not going to win executive MVP.
Probably not. Hey, you never know. Yeah. Maybe he flips, like, Maybe he turns Chris Dunn into Kristaps Porzingis. Maybe he takes advantage.
Oh, by attaching Lauri Markkanen and the next 50 first-rounders unprotected because he's still of the illusion that you need to give up picks when it's not necessary. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, that is true. I should say Executive of the Year, Sam Presti, congratulations. Come get your award at any time because that race is over.
Yep.
But everything else is wide open. So that is going to do it for us. Matt, thank you again for joining us. Could you give our listeners one more reminder where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Sure. Thanks for having me on, guys. I really enjoyed the conversation. You guys are really smart, and this was a really fun podcast to be on. You can find me at CBS Sports. You can catch me in brevity at Matt Moore CBS, and you can catch me not in brevity at HB Basketball at any time. And I really, again, appreciate you guys having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Good. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. You're welcome back anytime. Please, everyone, give Matt a follow. He's one of the best basketball Twitter follows out there, as I'm sure all of you already know. In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter at @TheNBAPod. In our bio, you can find all three of our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted this year on FanRag Sports, so check them out on Twitter at FanRag Sports and for their NBA content at FanRagNBA. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined by Morten Jensen, Sarah Chalea, and Matt Moore. Have a good one, y'all.
You too, Brian.
You too, Brian.